it was possible to move along the corridors without shivering. Various secondary systems that had been unavailable during the blackout were brought hesitantly back online. The trains which ferried equipment and technicians up and down the spine began to run again. The ship's information nets, which had been silent, could now be queried. The food improved, but Skye had hardly noticed that they had been eating emergency rations during the blackout. Yet still none of the adults would discuss exactly what had happened. Eventually, when something like normal shipboard life had returned, Skye managed to sneak back into the nursery. The room was lit, but to his surprise, everything looked more or less as he had left it, Clown frozen in that strange shape he had assumed after the flash. Skye had crept closer to examine the distorted form of his friend. He could see now that all Clown had ever been was a pattern in the tiny coloured squares that covered the nursery's walls, floor, and ceiling. Clown had been a kind of moving picture that only made sense, only looked right, when seen from precisely Skye's point of view. Clown had appeared to be physically present in the room, not simply drawn on the wall, because his feet and legs had been drawn on the floor as well, but with a perspective distorted such that it looked perfectly real from where Skye happened to be. The room must have mapped Skye and his direction of gaze. Had he been able to shift his viewpoint fast enough, faster than the room could recompute Clown's image, he would perhaps have seen through that trick of perspective. But Clown was always much faster than Skye. For 3 years he had never doubted that Clown was real, even if Clown could never touch or be touched by anything. His parents had abdicated responsibility to an illusion. Now, however, in a mood of eager forgiveness, he pushed such thoughts from his mind, awed by the sheer size of the freight bay and the prospect of what lay ahead. What made the place all the larger was the fact that the two of them were quite alone, surrounded only by a puddle of moving light. The rest of the chamber was suggested rather than clearly seen, its dimensions hinted at by the dark, looming shapes of cargo containers and their associated handling machines receding along curved lines into blackness. Parked here and there were various spacecraft, some little more than single-person tugs or broomsticks designed for flying immediately outside the ship, while others were fully pressurized taxicraft built for crossing to other flotilla craft. The taxis could enter an atmosphere in an emergency, but they were not designed to make the return trip to space. The delta-winged landers, which would make multiple journeys down to the surface of Journey's End, were too large to store inside the Santiago. They were attached, instead, to the outside of the ship, and there was almost no way to see them unless you worked on one of the external work crews, as his mother had done before her death. Titus halted near one of the small shuttles. "Yes," he said, "we're going outside. I think it's time you saw things the way they really are."
"What things?"
But by way of answer, Titus only elevated the cuff of his uniform and spoke quietly into his bracelet. "Enable excursion, Vehicle 15. There was no hesitation, no querying of his authority. The taxi answered him instantly, lights flicking on across its wedge-shaped hull, its cockpit door craning open on smooth pistons, and the pallet on which it was mounted rotating to bring the door closer and align the vehicle with its departure track. Steam started to vent from ports spaced along the vehicle's side, and Skye could hear the growing whine of turbines somewhere inside the machine's angular hull. A few seconds ago, the thing had been a piece of sleek dead metal, but now there were awesome energies at its disposal, barely contained. He hesitated at the door until his father beckoned that he lead.